everybody. Welcome back to the Great and Terrible AHS. It's Season 8, Episode 9, Fire and Rain. We're back at it again with Mutt Nutter and Kit Fisto or whatever. But enough about those guys. I'm also joined by Michelle Lovely and Slowbeef. Hey!
Hello!
Yeah, unfortunately, we do have more time with our two worst tech bro characters, and this episode makes me mad because they can't decide if they're incompetent or not. The guys who made a robot that jerks you off so hard it rips your dick off your body, like, I don't know, maybe they're good at other stuff.
Yeah, also there's like certain points where it like it's almost like they're trying to make them likable, not like likable, but like likable antagonists where you're like, ooh, well, I like them because they're sassy and they have like funny little quips. And it's like, no, I still hate them. They aren't likable and I wish they weren't on the screen. They do a bit. There's going to be a couple points in this episode, but like it starts with this scene and like these people that we have to continue to deal with. Where they're going to, like, pretend and act like they being the writers of the TV show, are in on the joke, TM, and that, like, they're aware. It's weirdly almost like these two characters are supposed to be self-inserts for the writers, where they're like, we're in on the joke, and, like, hee-hee, like, we know that, like, you guys have a lot of criticisms about our writing, and we're going to have these two characters kind of poke fun at it, because we're in on it, and it just reeks of, like, work. Silence brand. Like, it's big Silence brand energy. I hate it. It starts with them talking about their hair, where they're like, oh, and Michael has such bad hair. And, like, in case you aren't watching along, like, both of them have, like, heinous. Not, they're bowl cuts, which is, like, the bowl worst cuts. Part. But the worst part is, like, they're really bad wigs. And you can tell someone just took, like, kitchen scissors to them. It's brutal. They're both brutal wigs. They're really hard to look at from the perspective of someone who did, like, wig design and whatnot. And they both have, like, the same bowl cut. And at one point, they're going to be whining about Michael. And they're going to be like, and his hair is stupid. Which, like, it's not. He's got really nice hair. Looks really good.
And get ready for some really strange timing puzzles. Like, usually it's Liz who's on the how could this possibly fit in this span of time beat, but like today even I was like, hey guys, what do you mean her TV show just got approved? She's been famous for like a while. When this what are you talking about? And these two are like tantamount to a bunch of it. So we start up with these two dum-dums again, the tech bros building robots. And there, it cuts to a hand, like, pulling the trigger of a revolver repeatedly with no bullets in it. And, like, I don't know if they were, like, we were supposed to think they were, like, threatening to kill themselves or something. Or, like, they were gonna get shot. But, like, I don't care about these guys, man.
Yeah. I think you're supposed to think that, like, I think that's Jeff. I think the blonde one is Jeff. Has a gun to his head as he's typing on the computer, like someone's threatening him. But once the first shot goes off, which is like the first second of the shot, and it just keeps like dry firing with nothing in it, it's like, oh, okay, so he's like not in danger. I'm not sure why we're doing this like weird misdirection where it's like, ooh, you thought he was gonna get shot, right? Didn't you? Like, no, I didn't. I didn't care either.
Because in the notes you have like, you know, it's like it looks like they're making like a Russian roulette kind of gun, you know, like something that shoots for you, which like I think like was I don't know if like you're like a lot smarter than I am, because I didn't pick up on it at all, mostly because I felt very defeated seeing them again, you know. So I'm just like,
so
yeah, they're making this thing, a robot hood that shoots a gun. I don't even care.
Not for nothing, I think having a robot hand do the Russian roulette for you is like hugely pussy shit. That's like a big part of it is you pull the trigger while holding the gun to your own head. That's why it's hard. That's like why it's like it looks hard when people do it in movies. So like having a robot do it, that's just getting shot by a robot. That's not impressive. At least 10 witches are going to do that at the end of this episode. Big fucking whoop.
Yeah.
And, you know, yeah, go ahead.
I was going to say, the only reason why I think it's a Russian roulette robot versus just, like, them trying to teach a robot how to shoot a gun is because in roughly 5 minutes, we'll see that a robot shooting a gun is not an issue for them. So, like, but this is fine true. Motor skills is not an, is, like, not their forte. We've seen them make three things. We've seen them make a hand job robot that's bad. We've seen them make Mead, who is God's perfect Mossad killing machine. And then we've seen them make a Russian roulette robot that doesn't work. So I don't really know how they're making their money.
You know what would have been like a good joke right here? And I'm not going to do it correct or whatever, but it's just sort of like, why are you making that? You says one of the Mutt Nutter or whatever the fuck their names are. And then the other one would be like, I couldn't get them jerk off robot working, so I designed the next best thing or something. Laugh track, you know?
Yeah.
But like, instead it's just a random like gun shooting here. So
I honestly thought this opening sequence, because right after this happens, right after Mutt walks in on Jeff being like, the gun robot's not doing well, we have to try with different bullets or whatever. Jeff's about to go full apeshit bonkers bananas and throw like a toddler's meltdown temper tantrum. And I thought, I'm like, is this like before they got rich? Like, was this what they were doing? And this is a flashback and a flashback, and this is supposed to be in the past? Like, what is causing this? We've not seen this kind of behavior from this character before.
So what it is they go in and they're like, the robot's not working. And also, my coffee took 5 minutes to show up. I think I'm going to kill myself. And it's like really annoying. Mm-hmm. And they have the other character just be like, hey, man, we know this isn't about the coffee. What's it actually about? And then he's like, oh, well, it's just the Antichrist showed up and he's a bitch. He's not doing it. He doesn't know what to do. He's like, oh, I don't know how to be the Antichrist. I can't stand this guy. And it's like, dude, he showed up like an hour ago. Relax. Holy shit.
Yeah, he's having like a meltdown. Like he's fully tweaking. Like fucking whichever one Evan Peters is, I think Jeff is like fully tweaking. And it's like you didn't seem that like interested in causing the apocalypse in the last episode when we met you. And B, like has it been like 45 minutes? Like give him some time. He's 5 years old. Let him try.
I can follow like, hey, I finally met the Antichrist who I worship because I'm a Satanist. Just in case we, you know, forgot that. But like, you know, I can get behind it. But what they're doing here too, I feel like, is because Evan Peters in his little speech about how like, somebody needed a green arrow that said left turn only. Like, why do you even need a signal? Like, society's dead. We have to remake it. It's like they're giving the motivation as to, like, here's why these two bros who are super rich and, you know, get, like, BJs from random girls and whatever, like, why they would want to end the world. But it's like, but you know what? Like, you haven't given any motivation for the Satanists to want that anyway. Like, you already gave me the same motivation, which is they're Satanists, whatever. So I don't know what this is doing here. And then why we don't bother with the other characters. But, yeah, who gives a shit?
Also, it's just stupid because, like, if one of them started to complain about, like, oh, my coffee was late, they'd be like, it's okay, little buddy. Here, enjoy a nice platter of cocaine.
And then they'd be fine again. That's my thing. I'm like, why are you driving to work? You're, like, a multi-billionaire. Why are you driving to the office?
Seriously. But like, or like, you know, it's like, I hate this coffee. And then like, this is the student, and he's like, signature roast, who signed off on this? Who is this joke for? Like, who cares? Like, it's not a funny thing. Like, oh, you know how they call it signature roast? Like, yeah, not really, you know? Like, I don't, like, I drink a lot of coffee, and I don't.
And also, what's the deal with airplane food? Jesus Christ!
Yeah. Like,
I know, these jokes don't work when you're allegedly mega rich and like, or, you know, banging like Brad Pitt every other day or whatever the fuck they're doing.
That's what I mean. mean? Is like, I was like, is this like the past before they got rich and like had the Satan stuff? Like, are they still struggling like programmers? Because this is how like somebody who like had a studio apartment and like couldn't pay their rent and like was on their like their check engine light just came on, like was at the end of their rope, like just truly sick of it. Like, that's the kind of meltdown he's having. But like, it's not. It's present day, which means that he has unlimited money and also like anything he wants ever, and like I don't think that that's the same. I don't think that those things are comparable. Also, this is one of, I think, two
drugs, women, power, breadsticks, money, haircuts. Yeah. Apparently not haircuts, but everything else.
Sex with Ryan Reynolds on Wednesdays or whatever.
Right.
But this is one of like two times or three times in this episode where they will suddenly start like soft launching this idea. Actually, it's not even soft launching. They're like hard launching it and gaslighting us, the audience, of like, no, you don't get it. The Satanists, like all of their, the whole deal, all of them, Satan, these people, Michael, Satan himself, like the thing is that their motivation is that the world is super shitty and we're causing global warming. And so we need to wipe it all out because everybody's super shitty. We need to start over. And I'm like, okay, well, you... First of all, that isn't what you said last time you said you wanted to do the end of the world. And second of all, that's a God thing, not a Satan thing. Like, the world being also shitty and starting over is not Satan's deal.
Right.
I could add one extra thing here. If they're worried about, you know, global warming, because that is like a specific example, is they're like, one bad impulse multiplied by how many billion people is how we get global warming. Do you know what's like a slightly like bigger detriment to the environment than global nuclear bombs? What are you talking about?
No.
Are you stupid?
It's the people. It's the human beings. That's the bad part. Again, literally the last episode, that lady at the church, the pastor, was like, everybody needs to get shittier now. Everybody do more sins now. And then we have fucking Jeff like, people are so shitty and selfish and they don't know when to turn on the left arrow. And I'm upset. We just need to, everybody needs to die. Everybody sucks so bad. I'm like, don't we want everybody to suck? Is that not like the goal?
You know, I know. And, you know, actually, because I actually want to go back to, like, Ty said there, because I didn't even realize, because you're right in the sense also, like, you can't even use the excuse of restarting humanity and all that, because, like, the show itself knows and shows what happens, which is nuclear winter, and it's really fucking hard to restart society, even when you got, like, all this shit going for you. But, like, here they're like, no, we got to restart society. And then you know where this is going, which is like, oh, yeah, we're going to have a nuclear thing, which, I hate the show.
Also, anyway, I just want to say, because I don't think we pointed it out yet, and it will reframe how everyone is listening to this, or everyone who is listening to this, how they are going to view this, because I want them to know, because I cannot overstate this enough. This is the penultimate episode of the season. There's only one after this. I need you guys to remember that. So we have this episode, and then the next one's the finale. It has all been a flashback since episode 3. Just keep that in mind when, at the end of this episode, when we get there, you find yourself thinking, well, that didn't further the plot at all. 'Cause it's true. And I just, it's so funny because I very distinctly, this was one of the seasons where I was actively like watching along. I was working an overnight shift at an office and I would watch it every week it came out because it was so bad. I couldn't stop watching it. And I would like read on Reddit to see what people were like theory crafting about stuff. And I remember when this episode came out, I was like reading along with the Reddit thread of like people live posting, because that's what they used to do. I think they still do it probably. When an episode was airing, people would post in like this one mega thread. And everybody, the resounding, like everyone, even the people who like defended American Horror Story to the nail, were like, hey gang, I don't know how they're gonna rectify this one. I kind of hoped more stuff would happen this episode. There's a lot that needs to get done in the next episode, and boy howdy, I got to relive that, rewatching this episode and remembering, oh, this isn't like episode 5. This is the penultimate episode. Like, and we're just now doing this? Yeah. It's a lot.
And it gets rougher, yeah. It just keeps getting worse, this one. But,
And we have to spend two of the last three episodes of this, I think even probably the third one also, if I remember correctly, with fucking Mutt and Jeff, who have a monopoly on it.
Right. I'm prepared for them to be in the final episode. I'm prepared for the fucking final episode to be all about them at this point, you know?
I only remember the very end of it.
Mutt Nutter experience.
I only remember the very end of it and how funny it is.
Yeah, same. I remember the very end. I forgot about the side story thing here. We'll get there. But.
Yeah, I will say, before we move forward... dear listener, I want you to imagine, think it, of any possible additional flashback we could possibly have. There's no way you guess what the flashback in this episode is. There is one. You're never going to
guess. No, it's not possible. It's not.
It's not possible.
Yeah.
Fuck it. You know what? No, I'll give the premise. If you had to test time travel out and you need to think of an event to test it on, you will never fucking test the event. I'm sorry to spoil what happens, but it's fucking impossible.
No, you're right. You're right. It is more telling that you can add that big of a constraint on it, and it is still no shot. So, Mutt tells the audience, I suppose, that, like, oh yeah, don't forget, Michael's evil Jesus, so, like, he's got, what, 40 days in the desert? Is he in the desert? And both of them are just like, I don't know, man. Like, what, do you know any better? And then Venable walks in and is like, hey, I'm in the show, in case you give a shit. And so she, like, is like, hey, so what about that that special meeting next week? Are you gonna let me be in the meeting of the big special meeting group? And they're like, no, not really. You know you're not really up for that. And she's like, is it because of my scoliosis? And they go, no, what are you talking about? Like,
the way she says it.
It's insane how much Venable is, like, trying to make everything about the scoliosis when it, like, is just not relevant literally ever once in the show.
It is so funny, too, because the way that, like, it's presented is because, like, she starts getting mad and she's like, but I've done so much for this company, blah, blah, blah. And they're like, no, like, you're just, like, our secretary, blah, 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 blah. And then Mutt says something to the effect of, like, if you aren't where you want to be, just look in the mirror. And I'm like, that's nothing. That statement means nothing. And she goes, in the mirror? Do you mean my disability? And then Jeff across the room goes, it's not your scoliosis, Venable. It's the chip on your shoulder. And he says it just like that, like we're watching, like, an SNL sketch. It made me physically recoil, but it was also very funny without, like, I don't think it was supposed to be funny, but it was funny because it wasn't supposed to be funny.
Yeah.
The thing that was funny to me, too, is when she first said, do you mean my disability? I legitimately had to think and be like, what was her disability? And then she was like, my scoliosis. And I was like, shut up.
I'll be honest. I totally forgot she had scoliosis until right now on the podcast when, like, Cliff mentioned something about it.
It doesn't matter.
I'm like, oh, we were in that.
Like, remember, this is the penultimate episode. Her scoliosis doesn't fucking matter. Like, we see it in the first three episodes when she's running the underground or whatever, and we're like, oh no, her scoliosis. And, like, right now, scoliosis still doesn't matter and will not affect anything. So, like, I don't know why it's even important that this... They were like, we need to make sure people don't confuse her for Cordelia. How can we possibly differentiate the two? Make sure one of them doesn't shut the fuck up about their scoliosis, question mark? Fucking Cordelia was blind for season three. Like, if we're really going tit for tat on disabilities.
Yeah, she does make a lot less of a deal about being blind than this lady does about having scoliosis, which, like, I'm not here to say one suffering is worse than another, but I feel like if you were having a competition, scoliosis would probably, like, sit that one out.
Yeah.
I think.
Like, to be clear, she doesn't, the reason why we keep forgetting she has scoliosis is because, like, A, it doesn't affect anything, and B, it doesn't affect anything. She's just, like, a lady. So, like, it's not like, oh, well, she has to, like, use, like, a wheelchair to get around, or, like, oh, she, like, had to have robot
like
legs
or
something.
It's just... Or, like, her spine is tilted to the side or something. No, she's just... It's just the same lady.
And she just tells us she has scoliosis every so often to remind us that she has scoliosis. And it's like... Okay, well, is that going to be relevant to any, like, plot points moving forward? No. It's just important to us, parentheses, the writers, that you know that we, like, gave this character this... Do you think this was them trying to be inclusive? They were like, we haven't had a disabled character this season, so we'll make able-bodied Miss Paulson play someone with rolling the dice. You know, like, those sex dice that are, like, kids and then, like, a body part? But it's like...
Inclusivity dice.
Yeah, it's their inclusivity dice, their DEI dice. They're like, rolling dice. Sarah Paulson, scoliosis, question mark? And so she's not happy with how this conversation is going. And I need to emphasize that this conversation ends with her being like, I'm not booking you. You're in-flight prostitutes. Go, like, suck an egg. And then she leaves. She very explicitly says she's not booking them prostitutes. That's very important to me. And then Jeff says, this gives me an idea. It's unclear what part of that gives him an idea, because what they do next is more related.
The idea is that he should do anything himself, I think. I think that's literally it, is that he should do anything.
Oh, that's so smart. Wow.
You do it. Oh, that's a good idea. I should do it.
Wow.
I'm a genius, doing by things? The way.
Huh.
This show is so smart. Wow. It's a real thinker. It's like Rick and Morty. You have to have a really high IQ to understand that.
It's like American Dad. So then we have the opening sequence, and then we cut back to witch school. And for some reason, yeah, okay, good. Someone else felt this too. They found another dead bird, which, like, why? they're getting a lot of dead birds around here, I noticed. But Mallory is trying to revive one, which, like, they already did this. Like, she already revived some stuff. So I don't know why they're like, you need to keep doing it.
I think they're like, it's like in case the audience forgot, maybe. That's the only thing I can think of. It's like, previously on American
This
Horror
isn't a good
Story.
Reminder because she doesn't do it. This is a bad reminder for the audience because she doesn't do it in this scene. She fucks it up and, like, can't do it.
Yeah. So she's trying to do it, and then Cordelia and Myrtle are like, oh, you can't do it because you're working too much. Your cerebellum needs time to catch up, which, second time one of these witches has introduced unnecessary science into wizard skills. It's cool. You can just say she needs more time to build up her magic bar.
Or just,
or
you
whatever.
Need rest.
Like, I'll trust
rest.
You.
You just need to rest.
Yeah, you need a full rest.
Yeah,
yeah, you're stressed
you
out.
Take a sleep before you can do your spells.
Why? I mean, it's like someone's like, why would a wizard need rest, though, or a witch? Like, oh, yeah, we better explain that. Like, no, you idiots. Like, it's fine. Like, everyone needs rest. Get out of here. Like, but.
Like, to her credit, to Mallory's credit, like, she is, for what we can tell from, like, what we've seen in both this and Coven, she is the, like, the first person to be becoming the Supreme under, like, extreme duress. Like, extreme duress. The whole, like, fate of the universe is resting solely on poor Mallory's shoulders. So it makes a lot of sense that she would be really, really stressed out. Plus, she's, like, a very sensitive and, like, sweet girl. So, like, they could have easily just been, like, it's because you're super stressed out about Cordelia dying and having to, like, stop the apocalypse. Like, you just need to take a minute and, like, recenter yourself and, like, find your magic or something. They could have made it super, like, magic-y. And instead they're like, your cerebellum needs to catch up to the rest of your magic. And I'm like, what does that even mean, like, physiologically for the people who become the Supreme?
Yeah.
Like, what does that mean, like, in a practical application? Because, like, remember, in season 3... there was a thing called, I think, like, the Sacred Taking, where they were all trying to fucking kill Fiona.
Oh, they mentioned that.
Yeah.
Yeah, they mentioned that later in this episode that they want to do that. Yeah.
It's the spell we do, and by the spell we do, I mean we fucking kill the Supreme. I don't know why it's a magic spell. To kill Fiona, the shitty Supreme from season 3, so that the new Supreme could just windmill slam straight in there. And I'm like, well, how does that affect the cerebellum? Does the cerebellum just be like, oh, okay, it's cool. You did the sacred taking, so yeah. It's fine.
They made the mistake of going one level too accurate in their scientific terminology when talking about magic. Because if they just said something like, her magic circuit needs a break, I would just be like, okay, I don't know what the fuck that is, but you seem confident. Like, okay, cool. Yeah, absolutely. But instead it's like the cerebellum. I'm like, no, I know what that, I have one of those. Oh, yeah. There's no magic in that thing. That's not on my Xbox. You can't hear me.
Huge. But they do.
So, Mallory can't do it because she's having a rough time. And then, Cordelia is about to prove. This is the beginning of Cordelia. Not the beginning. The beginning of this episode of Cordelia being extremely confident in the fact that she's an incredible witch and supreme, despite all previous evidence to the contrary. And I'll be real. If I was any of the witches under Cordelia right now, if Cordelia was like, oh yeah, I put up a big barrier to protect everybody, I'd be like, so I'm getting a gun.
Yeah.
They kind of do that.
Like, sorry, dog, not good enough. You're like wicked shitty at protecting everybody.
I would be pulling aside Francis Conroy, just like, hey, you sure about this? Oh yeah, wait, sorry, go ahead. They do that. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, she's like, Mallory's like, I'm kind of stressed out about the end of the world thing. And then Cordelia's like, don't worry. Michael can't get us here. I put all of Rubishaw, which I don't know why we've decided that's how that's said now, under an aura shield. And I'm like, okay, well, that sounds pretty intense. Why haven't we been doing that from like the beginning? That feels like that would have like stopped a lot of problems we've had over the last couple of days. And she, like, doesn't explain it. She's just like, don't worry, I put up an aura shield. And then it cuts to Zoe downstairs teaching a bunch of witches we've never seen, like 30 of them, all wearing white gloves, how to make some shit called the Guardian's Chalice, which is, like, a Home Alone booby trap for evil spirits that they can use. So, like, not only do they not trust Cordelia to keep the house safe, but I hate to break it to you, listener, in roughly 3 seconds, none of the shit they're doing fucking matters even, like, a little bit. Not even, like, a smidgen. So, like, the aura shield? Bullshit. The backup, which is whatever the fuck the Guardian's Chalice is, also bullshit. And does nothing.
Also, like, wouldn't you as soon as Michael Langdon had done something that you thought was impossible magically one time, immediately be under assumptions that nothing I do magically is going to function? Because, like, clearly, well, he's got something going on, right? Like, if he can grab somebody out of the fucking hotel that, like, even the Supreme couldn't do anything about that. Like, in particular, it seems like this man is quite good at getting in barriers.
Well, there's...
it seems to be, like, a thing he's
excelled
at.
There's one thing Cordelia one-upped them on, which is, I am going to make fucking sure your mother is dead and nowhere you can ever bring her back, thereby bringing out the apocalypse, it seems like. So, you know, she's got that,
I guess. Yeah.
No other person could possibly do any kind of magic that could, like, do something to someone's soul once they're dead. That would be fucked up and stupid. Of course, only Cordelia can do that.
You're right. Sorry, I brought...
If you're enjoying this podcast and are interested in supporting us or having access to additional bonus episodes, consider subscribing to our Patreon over at patreon.com/greatandterribleahs. Supporters who pledge $5 or more a month will get access to our monthly Patreon exclusive episode in which we discuss various American Horror Story spinoffs, such as American Horror Stories. Thank you again for listening, and we hope to see you around next week.
Also, not only on top of all of that, so she's like, I put up an aura shield. You don't have to worry about Michael. She says this with her whole chest, like her whole chest, so confident. I'm like, why would you not have this on the, if this is something that's so easy to do, why would you not simply just have it on the school at all times? Like, you've been attacked by witch hunters. You've been attacked by the voodoo people. Why would you not just have that going all the time?
If you can just set up Circle of Protection, my haters. You would just have Circle of Protection, my haters.
Right.
Like, haters not welcome. Can't enter in my home. Like, why would you ever just not do that?
It's like airplane mode for magic. Like, it's going to screw with some of the witches. That's why, you know, so.
The plane will crash.
Yeah, I can't get signal in this
thing. Right. Just, like, apologize to students, you know, but.
Like, they do all this. We get, like, a maybe two-minute sequence of them making the Guardians chalices out of, like, glass and shit. They're having arts and crafts time at the school. And then all of this shit they just set up, Dinah walks up. In case you guys have forgotten, Dinah is the Oprah stand-in lady who's also the voodoo lady who, like, blended up that lady's heart or whatever. And she walks up to the front porch, does one singular spell that takes her roughly, I don't know, 15 seconds, and then blows their aura shield the fuck up. And I'm like, damn, Cordelia, you're kind of dog ass at this. If one lady was like, give me 30 seconds, I can get in there. And then she just did with like a handful of rocks is basically what she did. She didn't have to like make a sacrifice. She didn't have to like kill somebody. She just was like, I'd like to be in that house. And the house was like, oh, real? And then let her in. It was sick.
Yeah. And they're like having all of the young in training witches who are making the Guardian's Chalice, like they're like reading a incantation or whatever. And it's like, no bad energy can get in here. No one can have bad vibes in my house. And you, if you bring in the bad vibes, you have to leave. And like, I think it's trying to set it up as a big like, oh, they're trying to be nice and send out everything. But Mead is going to walk in.
Robots don't have vibes. Robots don't have vibes.
Yeah.
It's impossible for a robot to have vibes. They are susceptible to magic, but they do not have vibes. They do.
So yeah, they just walk in. They just walk in the front door. Michael and me just fucking walk in the front door. and as soon as they see Michael, Zoe's just like, it's time to throw nails at him. Like, I'm going to throw construction nails at him. Which, why do you... I guess because they were making chalices. She had a bunch of roofing nails.
A whole bunch of them. A whole bunch of them. And in case you're wondering, wait, Mead and Michael, I thought Dinah blew open the front door. Yeah. I guess off-screen somewhere. Yeah, off-screen, Dinah, A, found Michael, and then B, like, decided she was on Team Michael. That personally to me seems way more important of something that you should show the audience than the fucking flashback sequence we're gonna get at the end of this episode. But hey, maybe that's just me. All you need to know is Dinah is Team Michael.
It's not.
I guess this. I think there was like a throwaway line when Michael was doing like interviews in episode one or two where like he's talking to Dinah and he's like, you're not going to fuck up my bunker, are you? And she's like, why would I fuck up your bunker? And he's like, okay, just making sure our deal still stands. And I'm like, okay, cool callback, I guess, or cool way to like tie up that thread. Wish we would have seen how they like met or like what she offered him. It would kind of flesh out Dinah as a character more, I think. Alas, it does not. And it's nails time for everybody. It's communal nails time.
Zoe throws a bunch of nails at him and he just does like the Neo hold his hand out and all of the nails stop. And then he just flings them back at everyone in the room, killing a bunch of people instantly, including Bubbles. So like,
oh no,
holy shit, we didn't need Bubbles. Holy shit, Bubbles didn't need to exist.
Bubbles, no. I can't believe we lost Bubbles.
Do you think it was just so they weren't all unnamed characters who died? You know, like, is that why that
no,
had to happen?
No, because fucking Zoe dies. Zoe and Queenie die in this scene.
You're right. Never
that's mind. A little. By the way, later, I just want to point out, Cordelia will not try to revive Bubbles. I just want that to be in everybody's mind. I just want everyone to remember that when the time comes, she will not try to revive Bubbles.
Bubbles had a DNR. which DNR file?
Well, so did Myrtle.
Don't you dare breathe in my... Don't breathe in my mouth, okay? Actually, yeah true. Myrtle did explicitly have a witch DNR, and then Cordelia was like, nah, don't care.
You're living again. I don't care. Like, that's got... That has to be... In a world where, like, resurrection is that easy... there has to be some kind of morality scale of like, okay, there has to be a point where you stop bringing people back against their wishes because maybe they don't, they like have lived a full life and don't want to be alive anymore. You have to stop bringing them back to life. They don't want to be alive anymore. I feel like Myrtle is like case number one of, okay, maybe you should just let them stay dead. And if you bring them back, you're the bad guy, and we have to punish you for it, for doing it. Because she clearly said no. Oh, my God. Who's ready for robot magic to be really confusing? So 30 randos that we don't know are dead, and also Bubbles. And Queenie's like, Mead, why the fuck are you here? And I'm like... Queenie, you have seen like 15 people get resurrected, including yourself two times.
Yeah,
two times. Right. Why are you confused?
I guess she put a lot of stock into Cordelia's I hide your soul forever magic, which, to be fair, I guess like did kind of work because this is a robot or whatever, but like... Why would anyone have faith in Cordelia? There is so much people having faith in Cordelia despite the fact that she has never done anything successful.
Well, also, like, even here, Queenie could put two and two together and be like, what happened to the aura? Fucking Cordelia. No wonder Mead's alive again, you know? Like, but...
Yeah, wait, why are they in our house? How did her aura shield get broken?
Yeah.
Obviously, they didn't trust her too much because they were making those Guardians chalices or whatever. You know, but she's like, well, how are you back? How are you alive? And of course, Mead does what everyone is expecting her to do and reveals that her arm is a gun, like a fully automatic gun.
And to be clear, it's not like you would think they just like would give her a gun. And that's why they had a robot hand at the beginning of this that they were programming to like hold a gun and fire a gun. You'd think maybe that was foreshadowing of they were programming Mead to be able to hold and fire a gun. No, you stupid piece of shit. It's Space Adventure Cobra time. She takes off her whole ass forearm and there's a gun
hey,
in it.
Hey, don't forget, the worst thing you can do is let a robot know it's a robot. Remember, don't do that, whatever you do. Okay. So.
No. Mead, stop panicking. Sit down and watch this documentary, Space Adventures Cobra. All sorts of human beings can have a gun in their hand. See?
Yeah.
It happens all the time.
This is Samus Aran. You're kind of modeled, you know, you were like her. That's all. See? She's a person, right? You
see? Know? Mega Man. He's just a regular man. It's fine.
Just don't play it. Just don't play it or look at anything about it. Yeah. Fine.
Oh my God. Also, not for nothing, but when this is happening, and Mead, of course, starts firing her gun arm, Queenie grabs a shard of broken glass off of the table and immediately tries to use her pain transference to, like, cut her own throat. This does work and cuts the robot's neck for some reason, which is confusing on infinite levels.
So many fucking questions. Yeah, so many questions. Like... When you're doing a pain transference thing, there's like a lot of magic that goes into it with you and the other person, and it kind of makes sense, right? But if it's a robot, like, yeah, can Queenie just like punch herself in the stomach to like launch a remote control across the room to herself? Like, how does this work?
And like, it can't even be like the humanity of it, because like, it doesn't work on ghosts. That was like an explicit point in season 5,
right?
Is that she can't use it on ghosts.
Wait, so it works on robots, but not ghosts, right? But it does work on people.
I should clarify.
It actually
doesn't work on dogs.
Ghosts can take physical damage. I should be clear. These aren't just like regular ghosts. These are ghosts who can experience harm. So like, there's not really a use case against it.
It backfires on her when she does it against March and kills her and traps her in the hotel. And the robot is just, it works, but not well enough because, you know, obviously it's like the robot who's not supposed to know it's a robot and maybe overlooks its gun arm now is like, oh, throat slit, beep, boop, blip, keep shooting though. You know, and
yeah, not only that, yeah. but like, it, if you'll remember in, I think, episode three or whatever, when we, I think it's episode two, actually, when we find out Meade's a robot, the reason why Meade starts having a fucking crisis to Venable is because she got like shot in the stomach and so, and she started bleeding like white foam.
Yeah.
And was like, oh, yeah. no, I'm a robot. And I'm like, this didn't stick in your memory.
Yeah, I know. Like all, remember, yeah, important? All these things. Mm hmm. Oh, yeah, no. They, like, totally forget about that. There's, like, even more stuff later where it's like, wait, wouldn't this, whatever. But, like, yeah, this is totally nonsense. Because, yeah, she had this whole existential crisis, and I was like, you can't do Nier Automata, American Horror Story. Get the fuck out of here with this. And then, but now, yeah, she's just, like, gun arm, throat slit, I am the Terminator, but, you know, I'm just
this
doing
is how
more.
Every middle-aged Satanist woman is. They just have these things. It's just normal.
right.
Which... So, like, to Queenie's credit, though, to be clear, the exchange that takes place here is Queenie sees the robot starting to shoot everybody up. Queenie goes, fuck it, I'll try something. Grabs a thing, slashes her throat open. That does make the robot's throat slash open, yeah. and it starts pouring out stuff, but doesn't stop the robot. And then the robot goes and shoots Queenie repeatedly, and that just takes... For some reason, like, that does work.
Yeah.
So, like, she can pain transfer, but, like, not the bullets from the robot. They really wrote themselves into a corner with Queenie.
And, in case you're like, oh, well, maybe gunshots are, like, too fast. She can't respond to it, et cetera, et cetera. No, because when that witch hunter guy was killing all of the voodoo witches in season three, that's literally how she beats him, is she shoots herself in the head and it kills him. So she knows she can do this to bullets.
The only thing I can think is that, like, maybe it's, like, a thing she has to consciously do, you know what I mean, or be aware of, and for some reason, I don't know why, she's just like, oh, you caught me thinking of something
else. She didn't think that the robot shooting everybody was going to shoot me.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Like,
she got caught off guard, just like, why is she bleeding white? Oh, no! You know?
Yeah, it's because like if I had that power, I'd be insufferable because I might not be able to beat you, but you're not gonna kill me. I'm gonna make this shit as annoying as humanly possible for you. Every time you do anything, it's literally the magic equivalent of being like, I'm not touching you, I'm not touching you, I'm not touching you, because you can just be like, that didn't kill me. You're actually hitting yourself. Stop hitting yourself. Stop hitting yourself.
And you know what? If you're gonna steal white blood from robots with white blood from an alien, you can at least do like Hideo Kojima and have a whole explanation about oxidation and stuff. So you're like, all right, I know you're not ripping it off. But again, given the track record, like, I know it's a small nitpick, but goddamn it, Alien did white blood in your androids first. I'm just saying. Anyway, but.
No, you don't understand. We are in on the joke. We did it on purpose. We're so
meta,
smart. This
right,
is meta commentary.
Right. Got
about
it,
what?
Got
it.
Well. So Mallory is now upstairs with Cordelia. All the witches downstairs are dead. And Mallory's up there with Cordelia, and Mallory's like, I need to go help them. I'm going to be the Supreme. I need to help the Coven. That's like my whole job. And Cordelia goes, no, I'm the Supreme. It's my job. Oh, so you're gonna go do it? No. No, absolutely not.
I don't even know what her, like, justification is here. Because, like, essentially she's like, we're just gonna fucking leave. And I'm like, you're not gonna, like, try anything? You're just gonna be like, well, time to go. Not even gonna check
gun
what happened.
Robot, I can't do any magic against that. Like, what?
Later on, I'll just tell you, they're gonna have her have, like, traumatic flashbacks to this where she's like writhing in her sleep like, no, I couldn't do anything for my girls. And it's like, you didn't try. You're right, you didn't do anything. You put up an aura shield and that did great.
She didn't even
that was really
she
it.
Quite literally doesn't even know what's going on downstairs. They just hear gunfire and they're like, well, guess everybody's dead, guess we should leave. I'm like, you don't even know who's shooting. They could have won
this.
Can you imagine if the witches downstairs just happened to win and then they're like, where's Cordelia?
The excuse was Mallory's too important. They had to save her. Remember, they were like, no, don't go downstairs. You're too important or whatever. Like, we need you specifically.
Yeah.
But
so why can't she leave? Why does Cordelia have to go? Also, they're gonna be there with like several, like where they're hiding, they're gonna have like a bunch of other witches with them, and I'm like, where were they? Where'd you get them from? Because they weren't even in this school or any of these scenes. So like, how'd they get there? It's really funny for Cordelia just to be like, well, sounds like shit's bad down there. not my business. We should go. someone should take care of that. Anyway, get in the Uber.
Be here. I have an aura shield up. It's like when someone, like, you hear like a car alarm go off. Like, I know it's not mine. Like, yeah. I have the keys right here, but.
Yeah. Cordelia is just being like, please, I think I would notice if my aura shield went down. Respectfully, Mallory, I know it sounds like gunshots. I would know if someone got through my aura.
Guys, turn the volume down on the TV down there. Sheesh.
Enough Call of Duty, ladies. We gotta lock in.
Now, for unrelated reasons, get in this Uber. We need to go. Oh my god. So they bounce. How they get out, who fucking knows. They can teleport. We know witches can teleport, so I guess that's the thing, is they like barricade the door. I'm like, why are you ever barricading the door if you can teleport? Like, let him come in that room. Who gives a shit? Now I'm across the street. Who fucking cares? But alas, they I guess off screen teleport to a different house. And Dinah, who is in this scene, walks up to Michael after all of the witches downstairs get killed, including Queenie, Zoe, and Bubbles. And she's like, okay, are we good? Is this good? I know we didn't make a deal on screen, which it seems like it would be important that we would, since we dedicated time to Papa fucking Legba showing up to not make a deal. Feels like it would be important for us who did make a deal to also show that on the screen. But we didn't. And he's like, yeah. And now, for the most confusing prize ever, you can have a talk show for 13 episodes. And I'm like, this character has not mentioned doing a talk show at all, period, in the, like, the quote-unquote flashback. I thought maybe we'd get some kind of, like, something that would show, hey, was she always a talk show host, or is that a new development? Because when we saw her last time, she was driving a Camry and like doing assassinations for white women.
Mm-hmm. Let's look at this deal, right? Because Papa Legba is like, give me a baby and you get to live forever, right? But her deal is like, hey, betray everyone who's trying to stop the apocalypse, which is ending the world that you are on. You get 13 episodes of your show, okay? One season. We can't go more than that. I'm sorry. I'm only Satan. Like, what the fuck? Like, you know, was Papa Legba's deal really that bad?
Also, it just feels like it's kind of hard to sell somebody on, like, your long-term prospects are good. Thanks for helping me set off nuclear bombs.
Yeah.
Like, I'll be real, man, if the deal is like, I'm gonna start the apocalypse in a year, I don't really give a shit if I'm on the TV. Now I'm gonna have a lot of time to really relish in that. Which, this is the part that drove me crazy, too, is during the opening bit with the bunker, there are, like, multiple characters who are like, yo, I love your show, my mom loves your show, you've been on for years, it's such a cool thing to see you here, you're famous and beloved for many years. And it's just like, that was just a lie then.
a secret
tool to help us later, and it doesn't help anybody or mean anything, because that's the thing is, because like, we're gonna find out, like, oh, so she's like has a deal with Michael, that's why in the future / the past, the first three episodes of this TV show, she's in the bunker. It makes sense that she'd be in the bunker. She has a deal with Michael Langdon. However they play it like the reason she's in the bunker is because she's a talk show host, which we don't ever see any of at all in this season. We just hear that she's a talk show host at the beginning, and then Michael's like, you can have 13 episodes of a talk show. And then that's it. Like, we don't see how it affects her life otherwise at all.
They could have They could have just had that be her cover story. Like, they later, could have just had her be like, oh, yeah, I'm definitely a talk show host. That's why I'm here. It's not because I was a voodoo witch who blew up an aura shield.
Plus, like, again, we also have a world where witches are common knowledge now, too. So I also feel like, hey, you probably could have gotten the show as a voodoo queen, just as is, right? You know, like, that's probably a good way to get a talk show, whatever. And, you know, later on we'll learn also you're allowed in an outpost if you have enough money, which she should because she's like an Oprah analog. But I guess she has a couple reasons that she's able to get into the outpost or whatever. So fine.
Good, because I was wondering. I was like, damn, how did Dinah manage to get in here? I knew she was like Oprah, but I was like, damn, how come she got in here with her son?
How come she's Oprah? Yeah, that's a good, we didn't need to know. How come this lady's Oprah?
In case you guys don't remember, also she has a gay son named Stu, apparently, who they end up eating in the bunker.
Yeah.
That never gets brought up in the flashback. She never mentions her son one time. We never learn that about that character. It's just, no, she's just like a voodoo lady who does assassinations for white women who hate their husbands.
Stu is literally there for the pun. And that's it. He has no like agency. His mother doesn't like him.
And you know what's extra fucked up? You know what's extra fucked up? Because Stu like doesn't actually have like any communication with Dinah. We don't even find out that they're like mother and son until like he's dead, I'm pretty sure. What's really fucked up about that is the only thing I can think of is that they needed a gay couple in the bunker for some reason. They wanted to have that inclusivity. They rolled the DEI dice and were like, it has to be a gay couple and interracial. Gay couple, interracial. And then they're like, how are we going to explain this black guy being here? And then Ryan Murphy and Brad Fulchek were like, oh, it's because the only two characters that are people of color are related to each other. There's no way that they could separately both have earned spots here. Are you crazy? And we all say, Brad Fulchek and Ryan Murphy, I don't know who's bankrolling your projects, brother, but I'd like to have a word with them.
Let him cook. Him? You sure?
But, yeah. Yeah. This is a Ratatouille situation. They have, like, a weird racist rat that also hates women piloting them when they're writing for the show. And hates drugs. The rat hates drugs. And smoking. It has a lot of weird morality opinions. It has weird thoughts about abortion also that keeps somehow ending up in the TV show.
Yeah.
But yeah, all you need to know is that most witches are dead.
Yeah, that's all the witches are dead.
Yeah.
That was it. You might wonder, like, wait, really? All of that, the culmination of this entire season's buildup of Michael Langdon's gonna kill the witches was done in 30 seconds and he literally just walked in the front door and shot them with a gun?
And not him.
Yep.
It worked in season 3.
And not him either, yeah.
No warlock powers, mind you. Like, Dinah did the magic here. Like, he's not even really, is he masterminding it? Like, what was Michael's purpose in all this?
He's actually 5. Michael's 5. Mm. I'd like to remind everybody, Michael's 5. Michael's been alive for 5 years. He's 5. Like, he's 5 years old, functionally. Like, I know he grew real fast because of him being, like, a Satan baby or whatever. He's only... The thing about it is, age is relative to the time we spend on Earth. He might be a 28-year-old man now, physically. He's only been on Earth for 5 years. For 5 human years.
He doesn't have the experience, yeah.
Oh, my God.
So, we head back to Mead's house, I think. Yeah, it's just like a house that has Michael and Meadbot in it.
There's a pentagram on the wall. I assume it's Mead. I assume it's Mead's house.
Oh, okay. A Satanist house, at least. And Michael's just like, oh, I killed all the witches, but not the 3 specific ones that I care the most about. And it's like, okay, Cordelia makes sense. The other ones you have no idea.
Yeah, what did Myrtle
you
do?
You might think Myrtle's annoying, but like you don't know Mallory at all. like Mallory's just been like a sweet little girl in the background, kind of plinking and plonking away.
I don't even
spells.
Think he's She's met Mallory. Really he hasn't stuff. Met Mallory. He doesn't know who Mallory even like is. Like he might have like a vague idea because of intel.
I need her dead.
Yeah, oh, right. I hate her so much. Yeah. I hate her so much. I don't get it. I don't understand. I don't understand his malice. Like, Cordelia feels like, I mean, I guess it would be to make sure all of them died, but like, Cordelia makes
Cordelia
sense.
Cordelia has a reason. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah.
Not Myrtle, though.
Who doesn't want to kill Cordelia at this point, frankly? Yeah. She's awful.
God, you're so right.
But, yeah, he's just, like, really upset that he didn't get him, which, yeah, they're like, did you just, like, hang out for a minute? Did you, like, wait? Did you, like, look around the place, like, check and see, like, did they leave a note or something?
Maybe they were hiding in a cupboard. Did you check, like, all the cupboards? Like, did you do literally any follow-up, or did you just assume, well, they're not in the one room I checked, so... Guess they're gone. Guess there's no way I can find them. Michael is so cool.
And so Mead starts having strangely high amounts of decision-making and agency and says, hey, I know you want to kill the witches real bad, but we can just end the world without that. And he responds with like, no, I need all the witches dead. We either need the witches dead or on our team. Which, did he ever try on our team? Was that like ever brought to the table?
No, it was just kill them, which like I think that's supposed to stem from, because the thing is he thinks, well, he is talking to Meadbot, but he's like, no, you said that we have to either get them on our side or kill them. And I'm like, from the interactions we've seen, Mead definitely, like when she was alive and a real person,
Spells.
Seem to hate witches and warlocks for some reason. It's not really even super clear why that is the case. Like, maybe because they could hypothetically stop the apocalypse, but like historically, at least in the public opinion, witches and Satan are usually pretty chill with each other. In fact, they tend to hang out together. That's kind of like the whole reason people were mad about it.
If we hadn't forgotten about the warlocks, you know, they would also be very into the killing all the witches plan, which might have helped here or even been more, like, made more sense than Dinah, per se, to get rid of the aura shield. I know testosterone's a natural inhibitor and all, but maybe, I don't know, something like that. I don't know. And then
We had so many episodes dedicated to how is Michael going to convince the warlocks to help him kill the witches? And they made like misogyny anthrax and so many plans. They killed John Henry. And then it turns out all you needed was just a handgun and to like catch him off guard, I guess, like a little bit by walking through the front door.
Catch him that off guard. Like, they were literally like building like Ghostbusters traps to try and get him when he was on
his
way in.
Mega Man, but Mead did it in one shot, basically.
Mead Man.
Mead Ga Man. Yeah, exactly. But.
yeah. And, yeah, so then it pulls back, and then we have the big reveal that Jeff and Mutt are the ones typing in the things that Mead says.
That doesn't... how could that work? Like, she's alone in Outpost later. You know what I mean? So either they're alive and doing this actively, and then they wouldn't understand why she... It doesn't work. And then you know what I mean? Like, then why even not tell her if she's a robot if you're controlling her? God damn it. But,
I think the implication is also that, like, sometimes she is in control, but sometimes it's them when they want to, like, get something across to Michael. And I'm like, does she not notice that that's happening?
That's what I'm saying, right? Yeah, because then it's like, wouldn't that, like, that's weird. I'm having these intrusive thoughts that are,
my narcolepsy, you know, that I got being an agent of Mossad, I guess.
Right,
I just take a nap for, like, 30 seconds, and then I wake back up.
I was talking to you? About how good looking and smart the developers are. That's not me making a joke. That happens. It does. It's stupid.
That's a thing they make Mead say. Because I forgot we were watching an episode of Ted, not fucking American Horror Story. Also, the text-to-speech must either be instantaneous, which seems like it has just... infinite ways that could go poorly. Are you telling me you type perfectly when you're on cocaine? Like, you never make a typo and she accidentally says like a slur while she's trying to say something else? Like, you're telling me you put the word in and she says it immediately? Because the alternate like thought process,
fuck, every time we type it in, she just keeps saying Satin. She keeps saying the son of Satin.
Duck you. No, duck you. No, duck. Oh,
why did we keep autocorrect on? This sucks so bad. And then Michael just doesn't know any better because he's five. And the other thing is, like, the alternative is that Mead just sits there and buffers for a second. And then that's got to be really weird for Michael to be like, yeah, sometimes my robot mom just, like, dissociates for 10 to 15 seconds and then she'll respond to me. I think I might need to get her checked at the shop I got her from. But this is the implication, is that they can type and then she will talk. Not all the time, but, like, when they need her to. It would be really inconvenient, I guess, if him and Meadbot were in a conversation already and they had to, like, interject. but they use this ability to be like, hey, we don't need magic to end the world. We can just use science. And that's going to be, like, the thing that they keep repeating for the rest of the episode is, like, we don't need to do magic. We got science on our side. That's so much better. And I'm like, are they supposed to be somehow both Satanists and, like, atheists? Like, what guy are we trying to make right now?
Yeah.
Actually, yeah, why wouldn't you believe in magic? You made a deal with the devil, like, literally. What, you know, like, what the... And also,
and
it kind of does beg the question... Why did we bring witches and warlocks into this if they're going to end up just nuking things anyway, you know? So, fine.
Also, why do they care?
Got a wizard money gang. Legalize nuclear bombs. Like, it literally becomes that. It's so crazy that they... all of this magic, all of these spells, and it's just like... Actually, it turns out the heart of darkness is a nuclear bomb we're setting off.
Oh my god. The thing about it is they're having this conversation and, like, I think the idea they're trying to get across is like, oh, well, Michael is, like, struggling to figure out what he's going to do. So, they're going to give him some suggestions. And I'm like, give him a day, dude. Like, he's five. But, let him figure stuff out on his own. Let him try and make it. He even tries to make a plan. He tries.
If you could do it, why are you even bothering with him?
Yeah.
You know? Like, if you're all like, oh, this world. Yeah. So just don't do it. Have fun. Whatever, right?
Why don't you just lie to him? He's not talking to Satan. And everything that you've told him, he's just believed wholesale. So why don't you just be like, hey, your dad told us that he wants you to do the nuclear bomb one because this one's taking too long. Because, like, Michael has not pushed back against anyone telling him anything ever. So, like, I don't see why that would be a problem.
Also, according to their version of Satan, Satan would think that plan kicks ass. Like, both dropping the nuclear bombs and lying to his kid. He'd be like, funniest shit I've ever seen. Keep it up,
fellas. They'd be like, you're going to super hell for that one, brother. Yeah. Hell yeah. Get down here.
Extra torture, which is what everyone wants for some reason. But you got it. You're going to be really annoyed in this future. You don't even know.
Hell yeah. Yeah, so they're like, you know, you got to do the no magic one. You got to do the nuclear one through Mead. And Michael's like, wait, I have a different idea because I've been trying to come up with a way to end the world and I'm now just workshopping. What if I became the president? And Mead's like, that would take a really long time. And he's like, no, you don't understand. I'm going to become the ambassador first. And I'm going to become friends with the president. And then the president's going to trust me a whole lot. Like a five-year-old would say. And then it cuts to Jeff, who's like, oh, this is never going to work. You know why? And then it cuts back to Mead, who is talking as he's typing, going, Michael, this is the plot of The Omen 3.
First, but, like, how dare you? You've been, like, stealing movies this whole goddamn time. Like, oh, like, what the fuck? Like, how could you? How could you?
We know we're bad writers. Okay, I guess, man. Do you want me to be proud of you?
Got my ass? Got your ass?
Yeah. Yeah, like, cool, man. Yeah, you're right. You have been doing a really bad job this whole time. Do you agree? Why are you smiling at me?
I know.
You can't make that
yeah. joke and it's okay. Like, it doesn't work. You've been doing the thing. Like, it does. And also, like, how the fuck these guys saw the Omen 3? Like, the really, like, weirdly obscure one? Like, get the fuck out
of
here.
Oh, no. I guarantee what that was, that specific one, is that probably multiple people had commented on, like, Reddit saying, like, I think this is the plot of the Omen 3. Hey, guys, this might be the plot of the Omen 3. And then they were like, the Omen 3? How do they know we are copying the Omen 3? And they're mad about it. So they're like, oh, this is the plot of the Omen 3. See, we knew the whole time. We were seeing if you guys were paying attention. Oh, my God. So this has been the more boring part of the episode. I say that because what happens in the rest of it... it feels like they, I don't know, like they did like a on the street bit and asked people on the street how they thought they should end the TV show or the episode. Because some of the things, including a flashback sequence, are truly baffling decisions from a writing perspective. Just truly, truly, genuinely baffling decisions from a writing perspective, because they're for nobody and they take whole minutes out of this episode for this.
You can't, you'll never guess. It's great. It's so great.
It's such a weird bit. Like, if you're having somebody test that they could do time travel stuff, why wouldn't you be like, hey, put a letter in the post box to be delivered today or something? Like, you know, something
easy. Please rip off of Stein's Gate. Like, just, like, have a lotto ticket. Don't win it. Get five of the numbers to prove it. You know what I mean? And it's like... like, just copy that. You copied everything else. Just do that, please. And then what they come up with is, like, wild. Just like, hey, I was watching a Don Bluth movie and I had an idea. I still don't think you'll get it.
Like, I would go as far as to say, again, without going into too many spoilers, there was a pretty notable bad thing that happened to us, like, 24 hours ago. Maybe see if you could stop that. Maybe we start 24 hours ago.
Yeah!
Maybe try to do something about that one.
You want to test out time?
Hey,
yeah.
I need you to go back in time and tell me the Aura Shield
is bad.
We need, like, another plan, too. The Aura Shield's good. Keep it up. But we need, like, another plan.
Say specifically, Cordelia, you're doing a great job as the Supreme. Also, your Aura Shield kicks ass. Maybe also we should consider a gun. Maybe we should also have a gun for no reason.
Is there a robot we can get to? Can you go back in time and make a new robot for us?
Cordelia, can you hire the Messiah?
Or could we, like, report an employee to the Mossad and potentially get her fired?
Oh, man. Yeah, so look forward to that, everybody. It's it's unbelievable. And at the end of this episode, you're going to say, what do you mean there's one episode left? Because that's what I did.
Yeah.
And I hope to hear you. See y'all next time. Ooh, take it easy.
Bye.